Hey folks, it's the studio cast yet again with Sarah Maddock and Todd Waller here. Sarah, how you doing?
Good. Today it's sunny.
I know. Where'd the sun come from today? Something else.
Love it.
Well, today we're talking about multiple offers because go figure, they're back. They're back in the marketplace right now, aren't they, Sarah?
Sure, as I wrote an offer last week and there ended up being $80,000 over list price.
Eight offers.
That's a house in Ann Arbor in a really prime spot, and that's what we're going to be seeing. As a matter of fact, didn't we just run the numbers today, and in most school districts in our county, half or more than half of all sales were over list price.
Yeah. Yep. So sellers are getting at least what they're asking for on a home right now. Mm-hmm. And so multiple offers, what are they? What's the impact to a seller? What's the impact to a buyer? So Sarah, like, give to me the best case scenario in a multiple offer situation, like, for the seller.
Like a dream?
Like a dream scenario offer? For the seller. Yeah.
Okay. Dream offer. Ready? Yeah. Way over asking.
Way over, right.
Cash.
Yeah, that's always good.
I mean, and why? Because it closes faster. There's no appraisal. It's pretty much a guaranteed, right?
Yep.
Cash. How about no inspection?
That can be fun. No inspection.
I mean, that'd fun
be great
for the seller.
Yeah, right.
Not advisable for the buyer, but
correct.
That would be a dream offer for the seller.
Exactly.
And then timing, right?
Yep.
Like either what, within a week,
yep.
2 weeks, or like whatever timing the seller needs.
Maybe the seller would like to be there for like 3 months.
Yeah, why not?
After closing.
Rent free,
right?
After closing.
That
That's
sounds
a dream
like,
offer.
That sounds like a seller best case scenario.
Honestly,
right there.
I might sell my own house if I could be guaranteed to get something like that.
And of course, my answer to this question is like a bag of cash and we close whenever the seller would like.
Yeah, exactly. Big bag of cash. Like Santa.
Exactly. Well, that would be nice if we had Santa running around in our marketplace. We don't.
Not quite there.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about some of the finer points of a multiple offer.
Right.
So you run into a house that's on the market. It's active. It doesn't matter if you're the purchaser or the seller. What are some things mm-hmm. that you can expect to see in a multiple offer scenario then?
I would say there's about four major things.
Four?
Right? And we should point out, and we'll put the link available on
in the
video of this podcast. If you want to check that out on YouTube, we can put it in mm-hmm. the notes in the podcast notes. But we did do a little YouTube channel rundown of each of these things and kind of with
right.
some graphics to let you know, so you can explore that as well. But I mean, the most obvious thing is money, right? When mm-hmm. a seller gets multiple offers, we expect that mm-hmm. the price is going to go up, right? That mm-hmm. the list price, that's not always the case.
Not always the case.
But usually, I mean, usually
yep.
if there are multiple bids, somebody is willing to pay above and beyond the sale price, whether.
Yeah, and the only, not even change, but like the fine point that I would put on it too, is not necessarily that the money or the value goes up. It really comes down to the net, I would argue it's the net proceeds that the seller takes from closing. So
yeah,
in some
that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because okay? You've got the price and you've got some expenses to sell, but
yep.
you know, what are you seeing out there, bells and whistles that the buyers are doing to increase this
net proceeds.
Sale price? Yeah,
yep.
The net proceeds.
Yeah. So it's an aggressive maneuver. I haven't seen it frequently, but I've used it and it works really well. And that is, hey, purchaser, you're in a multiple bid scenario. You know that the seller is going to want top dollar for their property. Maybe you can meet them at top dollar, but you'd rather, I don't know, pick up their closing costs. And so, yes, you might be meeting some other purchaser's sales price, but if you're picking up the seller's closing costs, you've increased the seller's take home from that closing by working with you.
Yeah.
So you're picking up some of the expenses of sale that the seller typically picks up.
Right, like you're adding to the seller's bottom line.
Correct.
Without increasing the sale price, which actually has some advantages, right?
Yes.
It means that the appraisal will be a little easier to go through, and it also means that you're decreasing the seller's costs
yep.
on those items that are tied to sale price.
Correct.
Like commission, like taxes, like title insurance. So that's a clever thing.
Absolutely. And it's like I said, it's been pretty aggressive when I've seen it used, and it's mm-hmm. impressive when you see it.
It does take a little explanation. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it helps as a buyer's agent for you to do the math.
Yep.
To explain to the seller, or as a listing agent, we've had to do the math and go, okay.
Yeah.
Two offers, they look the same on the surface, but when you really dig down, this one is actually going to net you more.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things too that helps net sellers a little bit more is this thing called an appraisal gap, right?
Right. This is important too. If the mm-hmm. if the sale price is this, or the list price is, let's just use our average home price now.
Correct.
In the city of Ann Arbor is about $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
But if your offer is $420,000, it might as well be $500,000 if there isn't also an appraisal gap.
Correct.
Guarantee, right? Because the appraiser's going to come in and go, well, no, it's worth $400,000. You're paying 420, but the buy if the buyer has a loan, which mm-hmm. should preface, if the buyer
yes,
has a
this
loan.
Is all because of financing,
right? And I mean, without an appraisal gap guarantee, mm-hmm. sometimes it's called gap coverage, sometimes it's called an appraisal gap shortfall coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of terms floating around. They all basically mean the same thing. Without that, the seller really isn't guaranteed that that's going to be the sale price. Mm-hmm. So they go under contract with buyer A, who offered way over but didn't mm-hmm. have a gap coverage.
Exactly.
And find out it's not going to appraise, and then the buyer isn't willing to come up with the cash or doesn't have the cash.
Yep, yep.
So that's a pretty important thing. And again, we can get in more detail about that, but that is something as a you know, with multiple offers, we yep. would expect that if the price goes up, the buyer, I would say, you have to put your money where your mouth
yep.
is.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And understand too, we're talking about multiple offers here. And so one of the assumptions that may not have been spoken or understood yet is when you've got multiple offers, that means the seller kind of can drive the conversation, can drive the negotiation.
Right.
So that's why some of these items are important for purchasers to be aware of, because you can put this in your bag of tricks. Like if you roll into a multiple offer scenario and there's only two of you at the table and you execute more than one of these, you increase your chances of winning mm-hmm. that bidding war. Again, there's a whole bunch at play here, but yep. just understand that the assumption is if you've got multiple offers on the table, the seller's holding most of the cards.
That's right.
You just need to be aware of that, and that's exactly what the power dynamic looks like.
It's about negotiation,
right?
Right. It's
right.
about leverage.
There it is.
Leverage.
There's the word, yeah. leverage. So there's another one on here, one mm-hmm. of the four that we've got. Inspection waiver or reduced negotiation based on the inspection, right?
Right. Yeah, in our dream offer, the buyer feels like they have so much money, or they're so trusting of the condition of the property, foolishly perhaps, but yeah. that they just say, you know what, this offer is not contingent upon an inspection, which was, it's huge for a seller, right? Because it mm-hmm. takes a lot of risk off the table.
Absolutely.
But most people in our market are not doing that, or at mm-hmm. least I'm not as a buyer's Correct. Representative. I've never recommended not doing mm-hmm. any kind of inspection. But, you know, this tactic that sort of cropped up in our marketplace over the last couple of years is to say, okay, seller, we are going to have an inspection, mm-hmm. but we promise that we're not going to come back after these little things like a right. GFCI switch or a known issue with broken window seals right. or a garbage disposal that isn't working properly. I mean, generally we put a limit on it.
Yep.
Depends on the price of the house, right? I mean,
it does.
I've seen it be as little as maybe $2,000 mm-hmm. and as much as, I think I did one that was 10. I mean, we were really like only concerned about, my client was only concerned about foundation concerns.
Major issues.
And you know,
yep.
so even if the furnace weren't working, he would have purchased the house because he already decided he was willing to take on any project that costs less than $10,000 on the house.
Yep.
And that's just a great, we've seen a lot of that when we are in a multiple bid situation.
Yep, and buyer's agents have been creative in putting together offers that sellers are willing to stare at and say yes to. So again, if you've got the ability as a purchaser to take some of these tricks, put them in your bag and then pull them out mm-hmm. when it's appropriate, excellent. Does every scenario warrant using every one of these? No, not at all.
Right, right.
So you would want to talk with a professional real estate right. agent and say, hey, what's going to work best in this particular scenario, right?
Yeah. And from yeah. a seller's perspective, this fourth issue that comes up,
yes.
have you ever had a seller want to take, say, a slightly lower price mm-hmm. offer because the timing was better for them? Just the timing that the buyer was offering the seller?
I've had exactly this scenario over the last few years yeah. where it was the seller looked at everything that was on the table and said, I love these high offers, I love these nets, but at the end of the day, this timing fits better. And you know what? Right. It's not worth my time or effort to continue to bargain yeah. up that. They've already given me what I want, I'm good. So
right.
yes, sometimes not the most expensive or the highest net
right.
wins out.
Right.
It really is incumbent, I would argue, on the buyer's agent to figure out with the listing agent, what are the priorities for the sellers? Mm-hmm. So that as a buyer's agent, I sit down with my purchasers and say, hey, seller's agent tells me that this is really important to them.
Right.
It may not be price, although that's usually going to be high on there.
Yeah,
right.
High on the list,
yep.
but not
yep.
the, it's not the only deciding factor.
It's money, it's the amount of money, it's timing, and it's mm-hmm. the amount of inconvenience.
Right.
Those are the three items typically that sellers are most concerned
right.
with. And mm-hmm. sometimes timing and inconvenience trump the dollars that come off the yeah. table for the seller.
What do you think, I mean, right now we're still in a seller's market, mm-hmm. you know, interest rates are impacting things a little bit, but we're in a seller's market, okay? Would you agree?
Hands down.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you think though, when things start to shift more towards an equalized market mm-hmm. or a buyer's market even, what do you think is like the first thing that falls off? I'm just curious what you
out of the multiple bid scenarios.
Like let's say it's more of a normal market, and you list a property, mm-hmm. and there's three offers on it.
Yep.
Let's say that's a pretty good. I mean, that's there are multiple offers. It's not crazy. It's not 15.
Yeah.
But it's more than one.
Yep.
What do you think though is like the first thing to go kind of as far as a buyer?
So I've got two different answers for you.
Okay.
Go figure, right?
Yeah.
One answer.
It depends.
Well, it does
that's
depend.
One answer.
I've got two different answers. If I'm writing the purchase agreement, I think the first thing that's going to disappear is that whole inspection issue.
I totally agree.
I think the inspection shenanigans will disappear when I'm working with my clients.
I agree. The buyer I think if the buyer wants to maintain leverage on any aspect of the sale, it is the inspection.
Absolutely.
I totally agree.
Absolutely. For agents that we work with that bring offers to my listings, what I'm already seeing is pricing. So escalation clauses, for example, you know, so much above the next highest verifiable offer, those are already starting to disappear as demand falls off a little bit.
Sure, right. I mean, if you know, I wrote an offer last week, I knew there was another offer. So again, technically it was a multiple bid situation, but it was just the two of us.
Right.
And so I didn't feel the need to, I mean, we discussed it as an option, but I didn't recommend an escalation clause in that case because I felt like, look, there's only two of us. Probably that's an indicator that the price was where it needed to be, or maybe even a little more than it needed to be in this marketplace. So let's just, you know, let's offer them list price and be done with it. I mean, there's no need in this case to really go above and beyond.
Yep.
So that makes sense.
And I think, Sarah, you hit the nail on the head there. It isn't what we necessarily believe should be done. It's what is best in the interest of our purchasers. This is not a unilateral conversation with our clients.
Absolutely.
This really is a team sport where we're working with our clients to figure out what exactly are you trying to accomplish as a seller or as a purchaser? And then we just have a bag of tricks, if you will, of how do we help our client
get
to that finish line, right?
Right, exactly. Yep. I mean, it comes down to, it always does in every single transaction. Where is the meeting of the minds, right?
Right.
I mean, like, I'm going to give you what you want. You're going to give me what I want, which for buyers is the house. Some buyers can't be flexible on timing.
Right.
Some buyers can't offer an appraisal gap. They just don't have that amount of cash.
Maybe
they need to lower their price point. I mean, so, yeah, it's interesting.
A lot to consider there. Okay.
Yeah.
So I know I've received this question. I received it a bunch probably 10, 11 years ago when things started to bounce out of the crash and have not run into it frequently over the last 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
But still get asked the question, did we underprice the house? And this is coming from the sellers, mind you. This isn't from the buyer.
Right.
It's coming from the seller when you're sitting there with 15 offers saying, which one of these offers would you like to deal with?
Right. Or, I mean, even in anticipation of listing, sellers will say, you might say, well, you know, your neighbor sold for this. They had multiple bids. Well, why would we want to list it where they listed it then? If they have multiple bids, that means they underpriced the house,
That's what I've heard.
I have heard that myself. And, you know, I think when we're realtors, we hear that and we just kind of go, oh, there's like this, how can I explain it to you? And partly it's because we've lived through how things didn't play out and you know, we expected perhaps multiple offers or a really positive response in the marketplace, and there was some shift outside of our control, either with the broader economy or the macro market or the micro market of that particular subdivision or wherever, right? That totally changed the trajectory of how things went in the other direction.
Correct.
And so we're always sort of beating against that scenario in our heads. But you know, I'd say there's a real difference between underpricing a home and pricing it right and having the market respond. Like there's a lot about that that's outside of our control.
Hands down.
And you know, like I know how you go about pricing a home. Like how do you go about pricing a home?
So when someone says, Todd, we need to sell our house, first thing that happens is I start staring at their home in today's marketplace. And what I'm looking for are homes that are similar to theirs that have sold in the last 6 months. Todd, why 6 months? Well, I go back 6 months because I know appraisers aren't really supposed to go back more than 6 months.
Right.
They can go back 12 months, but banks really don't like that. And I'm making an assumption. Hear that right out of the gate. I'm making an assumption that about 80, 90% of the people who are going to come to purchase that property are likely going to be financing that purchase.
Right.
So I need to take into account the bank's opinion of value.
That's right. Exactly. And I mean, you know, maybe they'll go 12 months if you're, say, in Dexter, where there's been all of 7 houses sold in the month of January, right?
Right.
But for the most part, there are enough comps that we have to price looking at what just closed, which means when we're deciding on the pricing strategy, we're looking backwards at what just happened, because we know that that's scientifically or mathematically how the bank is going to arrive at value. And so we can't be speculative with that because appraisers are not speculative.
That is correct.
Even when we want them to be or when we kind of think they should. But on the other hand, when a buyer is coming to that property, they are experiencing the market in real time. Maybe they've written other offers. Maybe they have their own timing concerns that they're up against, a new baby that's coming or a job that's starting. And they have to try to forecast the future.
Correct.
So they're looking at your price and thinking, okay, this is priced right, which I appreciate. That's why I'm here at the showing.
Right.
Right? I mean, if it's not priced right from the beginning, you get no showings.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean,
it's the danger of overpricing.
Even today, with if there's 2 houses on the market, if you price it twice what it's supposed to be, okay, anyway, that goes without saying. But the buyer is arriving, they're already agreeing to your price by arriving at the house for the showing. Then when they write the offer, they're saying, I agree with you, it's worth what you're asking. When they write the offer for over, really what the buyer is doing is looking to the future. They're gambling on the fact that maybe 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, the market will continue to go up and the house will be worth what they're paying today. So they're paying tomorrow's prices today to get in that house.
Absolutely.
Because of their own timing needs, or you know, maybe they just love the house, or they're worried that something else isn't going to come up, right? As opposed to if they aren't writing offers over asking, or they're just not writing offers, they're not willing to gamble on that.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
And that's, as Sarah mentioned before, there are some things that take that pricing or that multiple offer scenario out of the hands of the agent and the seller, because the market conditions shifted. Again, maybe it was something happening in the neighborhood, the community, maybe the overall economy.
Oh, a worldwide pandemic.
Logistical issues, lumber is a pain.
I mean,
in
some neighborhoods, like let's look at a townhouse, right? Like let's look at a condo community. I mean, there's literally could be 5 of the exact same thing come up for sale for whatever reason in that month. And that there goes your whole, you know, marketing strategy.
Exactly. I mean, here in Ann Arbor, right, we've got doctors that are constantly moving in and out. And everyone knows at the beginning of July is when the new doctors move into town and start their
program.
Their
residency.
Their residency. There's the word. My wife's a nurse.
Hashtag match week.
Yeah. Hashtag match week. My wife's a nurse and I can't remember resident.
It's
what the heck?
Anyway. Right. I mean, some of this is cyclical.
Right.
And seasonal.
And so you can plan for some of it. But there is stuff that happens where you just do not see it coming at all. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we've beaten multiple offers to death a little bit here. We've got like some of what's going on. So what's the takeaway for sellers, let's say, when it comes to what are we doing with multiple offers?
I think that when I'm advising sellers on pricing strategy, I say, let's pretend we're not in a multiple offer situation. First off, what are the most important things to you? Is it timing? Is it getting the most amount of money out of it? Is it not having to do any work on the property? All of these things, like the seller has to prioritize what their goals are. And then we have to proceed as if it's a mathematical, it's just a straight number. We're not forecasting. We're not hoping we get multiple bids. We don't underprice on purpose either.
No.
I think that's important to say.
And that we you and I have both run into instances where the home has intentionally been underpriced to juice the market so that they can get 30 offers as opposed to
that
like 5.
That is frustrating.
That
is frustrating. And I think that when we see that, typically it's an agent who's not from our area. I mean, Ann Arbor area, Washtenaw County, I would argue is a very particular market. I mean, it could make a difference whether you're on the north side of the street or the south side of the street. And if you're not from here, it could be really hard to come up with a number that's correct. I mean, I would argue having experience in the local market like
matters.
We do. Yeah, it matters.
Yeah.
It matters. I mean, we don't recommend underpricing a home on purpose.
Well, and that's part of the reason we've got Studio 48 here is we can like stare at our analysis.
Yes.
Try to divine what reality is and go, this doesn't match. Hey,
right.
Sarah, what do you think about this? Hey, Jeffrey, what do you think about that?
Right. Well, I mean, even this morning, we literally toured a home that one of our colleagues will be listing in a couple few weeks. and gave our opinions about, yeah, you know, and this relates to the house I showed over here, yep. and oh, I remember this neighborhood has the like working together, yep. we can really narrow that down and get, you know, 5 agent opinions
exactly
in a day of where that should be. That is very helpful.
It is
in a changing market like this too.
And so for purchasers, you might be staring at the marketplace right now and going, oh my gosh, it's continuing. What the heck is going on yeah. here? And I will simply argue, work with an agent who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
That could be an agent that sells a whole bunch and has seen multiple offers significantly. Mm-hmm. That could also be a buyer's agent who's worked with a fair number of purchasers over the last few years that knows exactly how to bob and weave mm-hmm. in a tight inventory, multiple bid scenario. Mm-hmm. Look, at the end of the day, for buyers or sellers, this market will shift. Don't
That's
know
right.
when, but it'll shift, and we'll go back to parity. And here's the thing. These things can still be used because when that
That's right.
correctly priced house comes out and it's an even market or mm-hmm. it's a buyer's market at that point in time, these things will still be important for agents to have in the back of their mind so that they can advise you as consumers and as clients moving through the real estate process.
Totally agree.
I think that beats multiple offers. Well, you yeah. think?
I think we're good. And again, if you want to talk more about this, we're happy to meet with you or answer your questions online here. So thanks for listening to the Studio Cast. This is Sarah Maddock.
This is Todd Waller. Thanks so much for being with us.